It's been 5 months since three hurricanes tore apart portions of the United States and islands across the Caribbean. One tiny island nation was probably the hardest hit of them all.
The island of Barbuda was once a Caribbean paradise. Now it is lost.
Hurricane Irma ripped into the Caribbean island of Barbuda on Wednesday, leveling almost every structure.
In Barbuda, houses underwater, cars floating through the streets.
Takeaway producer Rob Gunther has been following the recovery on the island and brings us this report.
Barbuda suffered a double blow. First, Hurricane Irma hit, and with Hurricane Jose looming just off the coast, the entire population, all 1,800 people, were forced to evacuate to its sister island of Antigua.
The house that I lived in, which is a family house, that was completely blown away. Nothing there. It's literally just down to the foundation.
That's Ray Beezer. She's a Barbudan school teacher, and she remembers what it was like that day.
Evacuating Barbuda, I was a bit skeptical because I didn't really understand why, but then I was made to understand that a next hurricane was in the path of Irma, and it was going to hit Barbuda. So on top of the fact that Irma literally came and destroyed, the next hurricane would probably wipe us all out.
They're two separate islands, but Barbuda and Antigua exist as one country. And yet the storm and its aftermath have exposed lingering divisions between the two, as Barbuda struggles to get back to where it was before Hurricane Irma.
What I didn't understand was why we were left in Antigua so long and not able to come back to Barbuda. There's still no electricity, still no running water.
People are frustrated. They've always felt like they've existed in the shadow of their larger, more prosperous sister island. Now, as some Barbudans are trying to rebuild their community, they're facing what they see as an inadequate government response.
My name's Dakota Jeffrey. I'm the president of Barbuda Relief Network, founded out of necessity, a direct response to the storm. Myself, I'm of Barbudan heritage. My parents were born there, as well as my grandparents.
From his home in Miami, Dakota, as well as others with ties to the island, have sought to take matters into their own hands, raising funds, sending teams to begin needed repairs. But their teams weren't prepared for the extent of the destruction.
Well, our first project on the island was a 52-day rebuild initiative that we put together. Once we got on the ground, we realized that the cleanup had really not progressed.
Where was the government during this time?
Well, as far as the government's response to the storm, when we got there, we were told that quite a bit of cleanup had already taken place, which is kind of why we put together our mission as more of a rebuild. The response as far as the cleanup, in my opinion, you know, it was a bit lacking.
The challenges that remain extend far beyond basic cleanup.
Well, I would say the biggest obstacle would be the restoration of vital services, electricity, running water. The bank is still not open. There's not even an ATM on the island currently. You know, people that have children, their children have to go to school. So, you know, obviously we would need those things restored in order for the greater population, you know, to return to the island.
Currently, no public schools are operating on the island.
I think that's totally disrespectful and ridiculous.
That's where Beezer and her team have stepped in.
The children of Barbuda have the right to be educated where they live. They don't live in Antigua. They live in Barbuda. It just upsets me because the Ministry of Education has failed.
In lieu of government intervention, Beezer and her two colleagues started their own learning center in Barbuda to accommodate the children who returned to the island.
On the first day, we registered over 40 children. And then the next day, the Friday, we registered again over 15 children. That is over 10% of the school population in Barbuda. So that just goes to show you how many parents have returned and said enough is enough. We're going back to where we live.
It's been a struggle.
That's Sir Ronald Sanders. He's Antigua and Barbuda's ambassador to the United States.
And the reason for that is that the hurricane damaged over 90% of the structures on the island. We had to evacuate every living soul from Barbuda and move them to the sister island of Antigua, which is where most of them have been since the hurricane occurred on September the 5th.
So what accounts for the slow pace of getting residents back home?
Well, if we're looking really at the question of getting the Barbudans back to the island, the question is getting them back to what? And that can only be to their homes, but those homes are structurally damaged.
But Ambassador Sanders dismisses any notion that the government is somehow dragging its feet or trying to discourage Barbudans from returning home.
Now, that's a nonsensical argument because it's costing the government $3 million a month to pay for the people who are from Barbuda to exist on Antigua. That's $36 million a year.
The government seems to have a long-term agenda, but from day to day, we do not know what is taking place.
That's Bishop Nigel Henry, who has reopened his church on Barbuda for weekly services. Bishop Henry is more forgiving of the slow recovery.
You have to understand that this is a 62-square-mile island. It is only inhabited by maybe, let's say, 2,000 people. The income towards the national purse is nil, very limited. And most of the island have not been insured. That becomes a problem.
Barbudans don't have homeowners insurance. And that's because Barbudan society doesn't believe in home ownership. For over 100 years, they've operated on a principle of communal land ownership.
Well, the myth has existed amongst the Barbudan community, and it is one that they've perpetuated for over 157 years, that Barbudans owned the island of Barbuda in common, and that they received this island from a man called Sir Christopher Codrington, who was at one point the governor under the British government.
As the story goes, Codrington leased the island from the British Crown for the price of one fat pig a year. In 1870, he gave up the lease, and today residents and the government disagree about who actually owns the land. But now that the island is in need of capital, the government is trying to get residents to accept deeds to individual plots of land, the idea being that this land could be used as collateral for loans to rebuild their houses. It's an idea that's not sitting well with many Barbudans. Again, here's Dakota Jeffrey.
The pushback to that is many Barbudans are saying, why do you need a deed for something you already own? And they're feeling as though, you know, for 300 years, this land has just been communally owned, passed down, and so on. And the controversy over the land is hindering the recovery efforts because, I mean, in a time like this, it's really counterproductive to be dividing the efforts. All the efforts should be focused on the recovery first.
Now, how I see it is, you do not talk about land when people have just lost everything.
Ray Beezer again.
That is the last thing you should be talking about, land. I see this as the opportunity for the government to now come in power to try and take everything from Barbudans.
Bishop Nigel Henry validates Ray's fears.
Barbudans have always been skittish about the fact that Antiguans are out to take the land.
There's still many challenges ahead, as a majority of residents have yet to return to the island, and with a timetable for a full recovery still uncertain. But leaders like Bishop Henry have faith that Barbudans will ultimately persevere.
My messages have been on hope, that we're looking towards the future. We're letting go of the past. We're trying to build not only a sustainable Barbuda, but sustainable personal lives. Those are the main themes that I'm holding towards right now.
For The Takeaway, I'm Rob Gunther.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.